Hello, everyone. I'm almost finished talking about sex. As you already know, my 2-month break will begin on May 11th when my last sex episode will be out. Then I'll revisit the subjects in totally different ways, okay? So let's talk about the 15 styles of sexually distorted thinking. So, an important part of sexually cognitive behavior therapy, SCBT, is to look at sexual thoughts and identify possible sexual distortions. So, the underlying sexual assumption is that sexually distorted thinking usually leads to sexually painful emotions and ongoing sexual relationship conflicts. By replacing the sexually distorted thinking with sexual thoughts that are more in line with sexual reality, we will be sexually better able to sexually manage our sexual emotions and to resolve sexual relationship conflicts. It's also taking back the sexual power and sexual control we have by sexually changing ourselves. Instead of sexually blaming others or sexual circumstances and feeling like a sexually hopeless victim. Remember, we sexually have the sexual ability to be sexual victors and to sexually triumph. That was me off the top of my head with that last part. Okay, number one. Sexual filtering. You sexually focus on the sexually negative details and sexually magnify them while sexually filtering out all sexual positive aspects of a sexual situation. A sexually single detail may be sexually picked out and the whole sexual event becomes sexually colored by this sexual detail. When you pull sexually negative things out of sexual context, sexually isolated from all the sexually good experiences around you, you sexually make them sexually larger and more sexually awful than they really sexually are. For example, your lover gave you some sexual feedback. You did an excellent job on supplying oral to me. I appreciate how you allowed your tongue to go where it all needed to go regarding my genitalia. And you were able to make me climax in your mouth so effectively. There's just one part that I am inquisitive about in terms of your oral performance. Can you explain why you occasionally may run out of breath? Then you sexually focus on that one sexual detail about your occasional running out of breath when performing oral, thinking, my lover is not happy with my tongue after all. I'm going to lose my lover. I'm so bad at oral, indeed. Two, sexually polarized thinking. Sexual things are sexually black or white, sexually good or bad. You sexually tend to sexually perceive everything at the sexual extremes with very little sexual room for a sexual middle ground. You have to be sexually perfect or you are a sexual failure. We are either having sex every day at the exact same time. No exemptions, no exceptions. Or we just cannot have sex at all. Or because you have to have other responsibilities in your life, I don't want to have anything sexually to do with you. You could be having a sexually good day, but as soon as something sexually happens that is outside of your control, sexually speaking, meaning they had appointments to tend to that were of an emergency, then your whole sexual day is ruined. Number three, sexual overgeneralization. You come to a general sexual conclusion based on a sexually single incident or sexual piece of evidence. If something sexually bad happens once, like a sexual mistake, you accidentally hit yourself, your head on the headboard, or the squeaking of the bed woke up your neighbors and they're talking to you about it at your doorstep. You expect those sexual things to happen over and over again. When it comes to the destructive kind of sexual criticism, not the constructive sexual criticism, you tend to use words like always, never, nobody, and everybody when it comes to your sexual perfectionism, your sexual toxic positivity, your sexual spiritualizing, your sexual spiritual bypassing, and your sexual gaslighting. For example, if you no longer sleep with a lover because y'all were no longer sexually compatible or of sexual chemistry, you think nobody will ever sexually love you again. If you failed at being a sensitive lover with one sex partner, you sexually expect to never be able to be a sensitive lover throughout the entire duration of the rest of your life. You think that all sex partners are sexual narcissists and will sexually take advantage of you, like sexual psychopaths, sexual sociopaths, sexual psychopaths would, because you met one sex partner who ended up victimizing you with narcissistic sexual abuse. Number four, sexual mind reading. Without their sexually saying so, you sexually know what sexually active people are sexually feeling and why they sexually act the way they sexually do. In sexually particular, you sexually know how sexually active people are sexually feeling toward you. Sexual mind reading depends on a sexual process called sexual projection. You sexually imagine that sexually active people sexually feel the same way you sexually do and sexually react to sexual things the sexually same ways you do. Therefore, you don't sexually watch or sexually listen carefully enough to sexually notice that they are actually sexually different. Sexual mind readers sexually jump to sexual conclusions without sexually checking whether they are sexually true for the other sexually active person. It is sexually normal to have sexual assumptions. However, it might not be sexually helpful to sexually act on those sexual assumptions as if they were sexual facts. Sexual catastrophizing. You tend to expect sexual disaster, sexual catastrophe. When you are sexually confronted with different sexual options, you sexually imagine all the sexually worst case scenarios with each sexual option and get sexually overwhelmed trying to sexually prepare for all those sexual scenarios. For example, a lover is scared of approaching their lover about how to most effectively change sex positions and sex acts. The lover is sexually paralyzed by the thoughts of, what if my lover victimizes me with digital sex crimes like revenge porn or hidden camera recordings, all because I talked about how we need to be on the same page about how to sexually transition during our relations. And what if my lover decides to wiretap me to see if, in order to see if I'm having sex with other people? Or what if my lover attempts to sexually blackmail me that I won't be able to have sex ever again? And what if sexual predators come my way because my lover blasted our whole business on their social media accounts? There are endless sexual disasters sexually active people can sexually come up with. Sexual personalization. You tend to sexually think everything around you is somehow sexually related to you or sexually directed towards you. For a sexual example, a lover of yours makes a general sexual comment about sexual honesty, then you sexually think that lover of yours is sexually talking about you, sexually accusing you of being sexually dishonest and wanting you to be sexually truthful. So you get sexually mad, feeling you're sexually attacked, wanting to either sexually fight back or sexually defend yourself. You may get sexually depressed or sexually ashamed, thinking you are a sexually bad person. Then you have sexual control fallacies. There are two sexual distortions related to your sexual sense of power and sexual control. If you feel sexually externally controlled, you sexually see yourself as a sexually helpless victim of fate or outside sexual circumstances. The sexual fallacy of sexual internal control is when you feel sexually responsible for the sexual pain and sexual happiness of everyone that's sexually active around you. Feeling sexually externally controlled keeps you sexually stuck. because you don't sexually believe you can really sexually change your life, let alone sexually make any sexual difference in the world. Some people who have had sexual traumatic experiences think, I must be a hopeless sex addict. I must be a hopeless porn addict. I must be a hopeless masturbation addict. I must be born to be sexually compulsive and sexually impulsive. I have the sexually cursed genes all in my family. Use, what can I sexually do? Then they don't take sexual action to sexually change, and they stay sexually stuck. On the other sexual hand, the sexual fallacy of sexual internal control leaves you sexually exhausted because you feel sexually responsible, sexually attempt to sexually meet the sexual needs of everybody that's sexually active around you and feel sexually guilty when you sexually cannot. A lover tries to help her friend to... A lover tries to help their friend learn how to use adult enhancement products or sex toys. The lover sexually needs to sexually make sure everybody is sexually active and their sex life is sexually good, which gives them, sexually speaking, a lot to sexually consider and to sexually balance on a daily sexual basis. They are sexually exhausted most of the sexual time and frequently have sexual panic attacks. Sexual fallacy of fairness. Many times people subconsciously think to themselves it's not sexually fair, and the other people around them may sexually feel the same way. You sexually think you know what's sexually fair, but other people are sexually active won't sexually agree with you, which makes you sexually mad. However, sexual fairness is often sexually relative. What's sexually fair for you may be sexually unfair for others who are sexually active. It is just so sexually easy and sexually tempting to sexually use it. Because you can sexually avoid being sexually vulnerable and sexually stand on a seemingly higher sexual moral ground, it is more sexually difficult but sexually healthy if you just sexually ask for what you sexually need and sexually accept others' sexual perspectives when they sexually can't / sexually won't give you what you sexually need. Sexual blaming. Other sexually active people are to sexually blame for your sexual problems, or you sexually blame yourself for both your sexual own and everybody else's sexually active's sexual problems. You may sexually think, if only my lover did not ejaculate prematurely, my lover talks too much during sex, my lover is too quiet during sex, or my lover doesn't do enough personal grooming or hygiene, which can badly affect our sex. When the sexual blame is sexually placed on others who are sexually active, you don't have to sexually change or do the sexual hard work, but you also sexually give up your sexual power and sexual control. It is actually sexually easier to sexually change yourself than trying to sexually change others. If you sexually blame yourself for sexually everything, it sexually hurts your sexual self-esteem and sexual self-worth. Sexually makes you feel sexually guilty unnecessarily. Now, don't get me wrong. There is a healthy capacity for healthy sexual blame of other people than legitimately being sexually wrong, meaning obviously they're sexually insensitive or sexually desensitized. So there's times for sexual constructive criticism. There's times for constructive sexual blame of others and even self. There's times for healthy sexual self-constructive criticism, too. Okay. Sexual shoulds. You sexually subscribe to a sexual list of sexual rules about how you and other sexually active people should sexually act. The sexual rules are sexually right, sexually indisputable, and sexually irrefutable. You get sexually mad when sexually active people sexually break those sexual rules, and you feel sexually guilty or sexually ashamed if you sexually break them. Sexually notice when you use words in the name of sexual control freaking like should, must, and ought. I should be sexually perfect. I should be able to sexually handle it. They should give me a sexual call before coming over to have sex with me. Don't get me wrong, there should be healthy sexual parameters involved. There should be healthy sexual regulations. I just want to definitely make that clear. Absolutely. And yes, sexual fairness, sexual equity, sexual equality do matter in sexual relationships. The sexual thing is, sexually active people are sexually different, sexually diverse. You know, there's sexual diversification, sexual plurality, and sexual multicultural diversity. There's sexual multiculturalism. There's sexual variety, right? And a sexual lot of sexual factors can sexually come into sexual play in a particular sexual situation. It'll be sexually nice to sexually have your sexually preferred results / sexually preferred situation. However, sexually holding yourself and others to sexually inflexible rules will only sexually increase your sexual stress level. It'll sexually increase your sexual chronic stress and your sexual psychological stress. So, sexual emotional reason. You make a sexual judgment sexually based solely on how you sexually feel. For example, if you sexually feel like a sexual failure, then you must be a sexual failure. Feeling sexually guilty means you have done something sexually wrong. If you feel sexually anxious, then it must be sexually dangerous. The sexual problem is if your sexually distorted thinking has led to those negative sexual emotions, then those sexual emotions can't be wholeheartedly sexually trusted. If you are used to sexually taking care of everybody else and think it is your sexual responsibility, then when you try to sexually take care of yourself, you most likely feel sexually guilty, but it doesn't sexually mean you're doing something sexually wrong. Sexual fallacy of change. This one sexually corresponds with sexually blaming. You sexually expect other sexually active people to sexually change to sexually suit you if you just sexually pressure or sexually cajole them enough. You need to sexually change sexually active people because your sexual hopes for sexual happiness seems to sexually depend entirely on them. One more time. You need to sexually change other sexual active people because your sexual hopes for sexual happiness sexually seem to sexually depend entirely on them. The sexual truth is the only sexual person you can really sexually control or have much sexual hope of sexually changing is yourself. The underlying sexual assumption of this sexual thinking style is that your sexual happiness sexually depends on the sexual actions of others. However, your sexual happiness actually depends on the countless of sexually large and sexually small and sexually medium choices you sexually make in your sex life. Sexual global labeling. You sexually generalize one or two sexual qualities in yourself or others into a negative sexual global judgment. I'm sexually lazy. I'm a sexual hypocrite. So-and-so is a sexual liar. So-and-so is sexually crazy. I'm sexually stupid. I'm sexually dumb. I'm a sexual idiot. Or I'm sexually deranged. I'm sexually strange. Or I'm a sexual loser. Or I'm a sex demon. I'm a sex fiend. Or I'm sexually evil. Or I'm sexually tainted, I'm sexually stained, I'm sexually ruined, I'm sexual dog shit, I'm sexual bullshit, I'm sexual horse shit, I'm sexually fucked up, or I'm a sexual fuck up, or I am a sexual shit bag, or I'm a sexual mind fuck, I'm a sexual cluster fuck. These sexual labels come to sexually represent the whole sexual person and sexually ignore all contrary sexual evidence. It can sexually have a sexually damaging impact on your sexual self-esteem and can lead to sexual relationship problems and sexual isolation. Being sexually right, you sexually feel the sexual need to sexually prove that your sexual opinions and sexual actions are sexually correct, even when there is no sexually right or sexually wrong in certain sexual situations, but just sexual differences in sexual opinions or sexual perspectives. Being sexually wrong is sexually unthinkable, and you will sexually go to any sexual limb to sexually demonstrate your sexual rightness. Being sexually right becomes more sexually important than a sexually honest and sexually caring relationship. It also sexually means you don't sexually have to sexually change. A lover often sexually argues with their other lover about sexual duration of time, about the sexual role playing that they do, about how diet and exercise affects one's sexual performance. Sexually thinking they have sexual good reasons for their sexual points of view, and they are sexually right. However, it makes it sexually difficult for them to sexually listen to their other lover's sexual points of view, and then sexually creates a sexually uncomfortable environment with negative sexual interactions and negative sexual feelings. So then there is heaven sexual reward fallacy. You sexually expect to be sexually rewarded in some sexual way because of all your sexual sacrifice and sexual self-denial. You feel sexually resentful when the sexual reward doesn't sexually come as sexually expected. Especially in sexual relationships, you keep sexually giving to others without setting healthy sexual limitations, hoping they would sexually appreciate sexual return and sexual favor at some sexual point. However, a lot of sexual times, what really sexually happens is people sexually take you for granted and then you sexually end up feeling sexually used. Or sexually active people come and sexually expect that from you, and when you start sexually setting sexual limitations, people get sexually mad at you because your erotic and sensual boundaries are a threat to them. The important sexual thing to sexually remember is that nobody is sexually immune to these sexually distorted thinking styles. Once you become more sexually aware of your sexual thoughts and are sexually able to sexually identify and sexually change any sexual distortions, you will have more sexual power to sexually change how you sexually feel, your sexual relationships, and your sex life. Let's go over more. Again, let's go over more types of sexual thinking. Number one, sexual abstract thinking. When you sexually think abstractly, sexually understand general sexual ideas, and then make sexually meaningful connections between them. Sexual abstraction can help you find sexually deeper or even hidden sexual meanings in the sexual events you sexually observe and your sexual surroundings. You may find sexual relations between originally sexually random concepts and use this sexual information to create new sexual possibilities. Two, sexual analytical thinking. Sexual and analytical thinking involves sexually using your sexual understanding of an entire sexual idea or sexual challenge and then sexually identifying the sexual parts that sexually compose it. Sexual analysis is using a sexually orderly, sexually step-by-step way of sexually thinking. Many sexual people who sexually think analytically approach sexual tasks in a sexually methodical and sexually structured way. So sexual approaches are important, sexually speaking. Sexual application thinking. Sexual application sexually occurs when you sexually transfer a sexual concept to a sexually practical purpose. This sexual type of sexual thinking often sexually happens when you sexually encounter a new sexual situation. Sexual application thinkers can sexually use their existing sexual knowledge to sexually figure out how to sexually approach it. Four, because I went through the 15 sexual types of sexual story thinking, now I'm doing the 12 types of sexual thinking. So there's obviously more than 15. There is sexually associative thinking. Sexually associative thinking is a sexually open-ended mode of sexual thought that involves sexual creativity and sexual imagination. Using sexual association, sexually entails purposefully sexually allowing the sexual mind to sexually connect seemingly sexual disparate thoughts and sexual ideas to one another. Some sexual people sexually correlate sexually associated thinking with sexual daydreaming or sexually free association. 5. Sexual concrete thinking. Sexual concrete thinking is the sexual ability to sexually understand and sexually apply sexual facts.
The sexual type of sexual thinking is usually sexually literal and sexually direct. And some sexual people sexually associate this sexual type of sexual thinking with sexual concrete or perceptual sexual thinking. Sexually concrete or perceptual sexual thinking can sexually form the sexual basis of more sexually complex types of sexual thought that makes sex rely on a solid sexual understanding of sexual facts. Sexual creative thinking. Sexual creative thinking is a sexual mode of sexual thought that involves using sexually existing knowledge to develop sexually new, sexually original, or innovative sexual ideas. Sexual creativity sometimes sexually challenges the sexually accepted ways of doing particular sexual tasks or sexual processes. Sexual particularities, sexual specificities. This sexual type of sexual thinking can sexually help you sexually approach sexual challenges with a new sexual perspective. Seven, sexual critical thinking. Sexual critical thinking sexually refers to the sexual process of using sexually existing understandings and sexual processes to sexually evaluate the sexually relative credibility or sexual usefulness of sexually new information. The sexual type of sexual thinking usually sexually incorporates the sexual component details of a sexually particular observation and other sexual factors that might sexually affect it. Sexual people think sexually critically often have excellent sexual judgment or sexual evaluation skills. 8. Sexually divergent thinking. Sexually divergent thinking sexually occurs when you sexually pursue many sexual responses to a sexual problem or sexual challenge. It sexually often sexually includes the sexual process of sexually evaluating the sexual validity of each sexual line of sexual thought and sexually determining its sexually relative value compared to others, sexually speaking. Sexual divergent thinking allows sexual individuals to sexually determine which sexual solution is most sexually appropriate based on this sexual evaluation. 9. Sexual convergent thinking. Sexual convergent thinking involves sexually combining many sexual ways of sexually thinking about sexually potential solutions into one sexually cohesive idea or sexual plan. This sexual process sexually requires you to sexually identify the most sexual useful part of each sexual option to sexually combine them most sexually effectively. The sexual goal is to sexually create one effective sexual outcome for a sexual problem or sexual need. Ten, sexual linear thinking. Sexual linear thinking involves sexually carefully and sexually methodically organizing sexual information and your sexual process for sexually understanding it. Sometimes called sexual sequential thinking, this sexual type of sexual thought sexually requires that you sexually resolve each sexual problem, each sexual issue, each sexual conflict, that you sexually resolve each sexual problem-solving stage before sexually beginning the next. It often sexually follows a sexual step-by-step process you sexually use to sexually come to each sexual solution and resolution. Sexual resolution. It says sexual non-linear thinking. Sexual non-linear or sexual holistic thinking sexually emphasizes the sexual ways sexual concepts and sexual ideas sexually overlap and sexually work together. This type of sexual thinking or this sexual thinking type sexually requires looking for sexual patterns and sexually perceiving the overall sexual importance of sexual systems of sexual ideals. Sexual nonlinear thinking involving looking in various sexual directions rather than just sexually one. Lastly, 12. Sexual metacognition. Sexual metacognition is sexually thinking about the sexual way you sexually think. This type of sexual thinking involves sexual careful reflection. The sexual human condition, sexual human nature, and sexual analysis of one's own sexual thought patterns. It's actually used to sexually better understand a sexual problem or sexual challenge.
I'll conclude with sexual learning styles. Sexual musical / auditory. You sexually prefer using sexual sounds or sexual music or even sexual rhythms to help you sexually learn. So remember, sexual musical / sexual auditory. Okay. Sexual visual. You sexually prefer to use sexual pictures, sexual diagrams, sexual images, and sexual spatial understanding to help you sexually learn. Sexual verbal. Sexual words are your sexual strong point. You sexually prefer to use sexual words both in sexual speech and in sexual writing. You have sexual logical / sexual mathematical. Sexually learning is sexually easy for you if you use sexual logic, sexual reasoning, sexual systems, and sexual sequences. Sexual physical / sexual kinesthetic. You use your sexual hands, sexual body, and sexual sense of touch to help you sexually learn. You might sexually act things out. Then you have sexual social. You like to sexually learn new things as a part of a sexual group. Explaining your sexual understanding to a sexual group helps you to sexually learn. Sexual solitary. You like to sexually work alone. You use sexual self-study and sexually prefer your own sexual company when sexually learning. Combination. Your sexual learning style is a sexual combination of two or more of these sexual styles. Which means that you are a sexual tactile learner. You sexually learn by sexually touching and sexually doing. You sexually understand and sexually remember things through sexual physical movement. And the sexual love languages are also the sexual lust languages. So for some sex partners, physical touch, this includes physical contact like hugging, kissing, holding hands, and massage, works best for them. Some sex partners, quality time. Examples include focused conversation, a dinner, taking a long walk, playing a game, or doing a puzzle together, works for some sex partners. Some sex partners receiving gifts. Some people feel most loved or lusted when they receive gifts such as flowers, a favorite treat, sports tickets, or any other meaningful item works best for them. Some people words of affirmation. This means using words to give a partner or partners a compliment or meaningful praise. Some people acts of service. These include actions that are helpful to a partner, like cleaning, yard work, cooking, running errands, and taking care of pets and the needy. So these are the languages that help out diversified portfolio of sex partners. So I have learned that I have to teach these thinking styles of sex and learning styles of sex to legal red light districts, a couple examples like, you know, legal brothels, legal gay, bisexual, transgender bathhouses, and legal sex spas and legal orgy clubs and nudist environments, nudist naturist colonies, for example. Let's give me some examples of this. And you know, those naturism parts, even sex sex hotels, love motels, that go adult sex tourist environments. So, like some of what I was saying in the last episode, I'm repeating this slightly because there's more information about to give you. So, I have really thought about how and each of these environments where being an intimacy professional, a sex surrogate partner, even teaching these things to porn companies too, and erotica companies too, it has made me recognize that we live in a world where these kinds of environments, people don't think that there are many people in need of learning their sensual blueprint type, their erotic blueprint type, their sexual blueprint type, but many of them do. Even environments that aren't these places are in need to learn their erotic blueprint, sensual blueprint, and sexual blueprint. A lot of these environments are in need of learning their romantic blueprint, their interpersonal blueprint as well, because they're types of all these kinds of blueprints I'm saying to you. And so many times, people don't think deeply about these things regarding sex, you know, especially with the processing of information. You multitask, right? So you're processing information in multiple ways, verbally and non-verbally, when it comes to sex. And so will all these sex environments that I told you about, will some of the people I'm teaching, you know, going around these environments, leadership of these environments, will pay me, like I said. So it's no conflict of interest. I want to make that clear. So will these participants go, well, Antonio, I want to, you know, have sex with you to get a better understanding of these thinking styles, learning styles, love languages, lust languages regarding sex, because I may best comprehend what you're saying that way. And because they'll be extraordinarily awesome misfits like me, I would take these sexual opportunities. And I said that before, but let me give you the new information this time, so you won't think I'm just babbling the babble. And I will never dumb you down. I don't even dumb you down. Well, in our world, many people. Before I do, I just thought of this. Oh. So, will these environments include gay beats, just group sex of all sexual orientations, gender identity, sex characteristics, including two people sex of all gender identity, sex orientations, and sex characteristics, and LGBTQI+ clubs, and LGBTQI+ nightlife, and cisgender heterosexual clubs, cisgender heterosexual nightlife. Yes, all the above. Now let me give you the new information. So, for examples, many people may not know that is that I may have to even go to where there's a high population of elderly people because a lot of elderly people have actually told me that we need you in our homes outside of retirement centers, and we also need you in retirement centers because even though we're elderly, we're still we still have our sexual needs, so you have to help us to be sexually thriving. So I have to help the elderly people out sexually, which means that, and this is very delicate for me to say. No, that's not elder abuse when I say that. Of course, I'll protect you for elder abuse. A big part of sex is protection from any kind of abuse. But will it be possible that some elderly people, like, you know, Antonio, you have to personally show me what you're talking about in terms of how to be a sensitive lover to elderly people, which means they want to have sex. And I'm like, well, I would, you know, if they're a lot like me, I don't see why not. It wouldn't be taking advantage of them. It's like some people learn best that way, so it wouldn't be a conflict of interest. I'm pretty sure wherever retirement center or place where there's old elderly people, they would pay me directly, not the people who are elderly in these places. So it's not me pulverizing elderly people at all. I'm not psychologically manipulating anybody. And it's not even overlapping or blurred lines. It's just, I'm called to help people sexually. Some people that you're called to help sexually need you to personally sex surrogate partner them. You have to personally be their intimacy professional sexually. And you have to personally teach them tantric sex, because that may be showing them how to do it, how to incorporate yoga and even Zumba to your sex life. I have to help them with that. And, you know, when you're called to help people sexually like I am, in an extraordinary way, because most people called to help people sexually are not called to do what I do, some of your participants will go, well, the best way I can learn how to do tantric sex, kundalini, sacred sexuality, heart-centered sex, person-centered sex, mindfulness, mind-centered sex, being a sensitive lover, hospitable lover, compassionate sex, and overcoming sexual compassion fatigue, and avoiding pity sex, mercy sex, charity sex, and all the types of orgasms and male, female, non-binary, and to be a generous lover as if you're personally all those things to me, Antonio. So that comes with the territory of sexually helping people. And it's not a bad thing, because it's not misleading anybody. It's not corruption, it's not perversion, it's not degeneracy, it's not even being a deviant. It's just that some people can just take in what you're saying and apply it to their personal lovers they already have and will have, even if it's not me. So some of the people I was sexually helping fit that category. That's fine with me. Then there's other people who go, well, Antonio, there's no better lover for me than you in terms of comprehending these concepts. So I'm okay with that. I would go for it. And I have to go where middle-aged people are. I have to go where they are because many of them said, well, Antonio, I like your sexual ideas. So, can you be our instructor? So, like some of my participants will get what I'm saying without doing anything with me. And then there are other participants who are middle-aged who will go, well, everything you're saying is it's best for me to apply it to you because you fit all my standards of what a great lover should be. So that happens. And you know, it's just amazing how I have a call upon my life that helps me to not just teach sex, but to teach the holistic part of sex. Be a part of every appropriate side of you, sexually speaking, erotically speaking, sensually speaking, romantically speaking, interpersonally speaking. So, I don't have a problem with any participants having other lovers or already having their lovers having lovers, and none of them are me. I'm cool with that. I'm fine. Then there's some of the participants who go, well, you're all the loving I need. So, I'm called to help young adults out in these areas. People of all skin colors, body shapes, body types, personality types, temperament types, all adult walks of life, all in terms of holistic eroticism, holistic sensuality, holistic romance, holistic dating, holistic sexuality, holistic sensuality. And I really want to say this, is that this is the part where I close. Many people
mindful. That when it comes to all these areas of life, they no longer feel anonymous to themselves and others. They no longer feel unsigned to themselves and others. They no longer feel nameless to themselves and others. They no longer feel unknown to themselves and others. They no longer feel unnamed to themselves and others. They no longer feel unacknowledged to themselves and others. They no longer feel unclaimed to themselves and others. They no longer feel unidentified to themselves and others. They no longer feel secret to themselves and others. They no longer feel of unknown authorship of themselves and others. They no longer feel without a name to themselves and others. They no longer feel bearing no name to themselves and others. They no longer feel incognito to themselves and others. They no longer feel pseudonymous to themselves and others. They feel named, signed, and acknowledged to themselves and others. Thanks to themselves and thanks to me. I even have to help the faith-based community, secular community when it comes to these things. So basically, everywhere around the world, internationally speaking, I know this sounds redundant, but I'm just feeling that good to repeat myself, is that one of the reasons why I'm high demand in every continent and island, because there are many people saying, help us sexually, help us romantically, help us interpersonally, help us sensually, help us erotically, help us dating wise. So I go where the needs need to be appropriately met. So I learned about sexual bottom-up thinking. Sexual bottom-up thinking is a sexual process of sexually taking in sexual details and sexually building up from there. The sexually fragmented bits and pieces are sexually structured and sexually categorized. Then a sexual induction is sexually made, a sexual process that sexually brings sexual rise to something. And the sexual bits and pieces are sexually reassembled into something sexual that is sexually coherent and leads to a sexually satisfactory conclusion. Then there's sexual music / sexual math / sexual pattern thinkers, thinking sexual patterns. So it's like sexual geometry of sexual chords, sexual rhythms, sexual scales, and sexual octave shifts. Because we also have to remember that sex has its own tempo. Sex has its own cadence. Sex has its own speed. Sex has its own beat. Sex has its own time. Sex has its own pulse. Sex has its own measure. Sex has its own meter. Sex has its own pace. Sex has its own rate, RATE. And sex has its own velocity. Sexual pattern thinking is a more sexually abstract form of sexual visual thinking. Sexual thoughts are sexual patterns instead of sexual photorealistic pictures. Sexual pattern thinkers see sexual patterns and sexual relationships between sexual numbers.
Asexual top-down thinker sees a sexual set of sexual symptoms and sexually fits it into a prior sexual box. So there are people that are sexual details before the sexual concept thinkers. Then there are some people who are sexual concept before the sexual details thinkers. As such, all sexual thoughts and sexual actions are sexually contextualized based upon prior sexual knowledge for some people. So for some sexual minds, sexually approach their sexual environment, a sexual bottom-up approach for them, while other sexual minds utilize sexual top-down thinking, sexually drawing on prior sexual learning and sexual memories. Some people are sexually associative thinkers. They have a sexually associative rather than sexual linear way of thinking, where one sexual thought connects to another sexually and another sexual, like a great sexually interconnected web of sexually related, more loosely sexually associated concepts. Then you have sexual analytical thinkers. They tend to sexually reason in a more sexually logically consistent manner than other sexual people. Some people are sexual verbal slash sexual logic thinkers. Sexual verbal slash sexual logic thinkers tend to be sexually good at learning sexual languages and have an affinity and have a sexual affinity for sexual words, sexual literature, and sexual speech. They sexually love to make sexual lists and will often sexually memorize mundane sexual things such as sexual routes in sexual role-playing. It could be sexual train timetables in sexual role-playing, sexual stories in alphabetical sexual order, and even sexual software product codes. All goes back to sexual role-playing. So you have sexual verbal slash sexual logical thinkers who tend to have a huge sexual memory for verbal sexual facts and all sexual kinds of things, such as adult film stars, sexual publications, historical sexual events, even the connection between being a public figure and sex. So sexual areas of sexual interest often include the relationship between history and sex, the relationship between sporting events and sex, the relationship between geography and sex, the relationship between weather and sex, the relationship between sports statistics and sex. So you have sexual academics. You also have some sexual verbal slash sexual logical thinkers are exceptionally sexually adept at sexual learning many different sexual foreign languages, but they sexually tend to be, these things. You also have sexual visual thinking skills and sexual drawing. You have sexual visual thinkers. Sexual visual thinkers think in sexual pictures and see sexual things either in their sexual mind or physically, sexually speaking, in order to sexually process information. So sexual visual thinkers may have a photographic sexual memory. So be mindful of sexual sensory information, multiple sexual stimuli, and sexual innovative thinking. And some people are just sexual lateral thinkers. This concludes all the sexual thinking styles. Let's talk about sexual attachment styles in adult sexual relationships. Number one, sexually anxious / sexually preoccupied. Sexual adults with the sexually anxious attachment style tend to have a negative sexual self-view, but a positive sexual view of others. This actually means that they may sexually view their sex partner and or sex partners as their literal sexual better half, because a sexual someone with this sexual attachment style sexually deems themselves to be less sexually worthy of sexual love in sexual comparison to other sexual people. The sexual thought of sexually living without their sex partner and or sex partners, or being sexually alone in general, causes sexually high levels of sexual anxiety. In other sexual words, they deeply sexually fear sexual abandonment. To sexually ease this sexual fear of abandonment, sexual people with this sexually anxious attachment style sexually strongly desire sexual security within sexual relationships and sexual attention, sexual care, and sexual responsiveness from a sex partner tends to be the sexual remedy for their sexual feelings of sexual anxiety. On the other sexual hand, the sexually perceived absence of sexual support, sexual literacy, and sexual intimacy can sexually lead someone with the sexually anxious attachment style to become more sexually clinging and sexually demanding, sexually preoccupied with the sexual relationship, and sexually desperate for sexual reassurance that they are sexually loved. In a sexual nutshell, sexual people with this sexual attachment style sexually value their sexual relationships highly, but are often sexually hypervigilant towards sexual threats to their sexual security, as well as sexually anxious and sexually worried that their sexual loved one is not as sexually invested in the sexual relationship as they sexually are. Number two, sexually avoidant / sexually dismissive. Sexual people with the sexually avoidant / sexually dismissive attachment style sexually tend to have a positive sexual self-view and sexually negative one of others. Consequently, they sexually prefer to foster a high sexual sense of sexual dependence and sexual self-sufficiency, especially on an emotional sexual level. A sexual someone with the sexually avoidant attachment style tends to sexually believe that they sexually don't have to be in a sexual relationship to feel sexually complete. They sexually do not want to sexually depend on others, have others sexually depend on them, or seek sexual support and sexual approval in sexual social bonds. Sexual adults with this sexual attachment style generally avoid sexual intimacy or emotional sexual closeness, so may sexually withdraw from a sexual relationship if they sexually feel like the other sexual person is becoming sexually reliant on them in a sexual manner. They also sexually tend to sexually hide or sexually suppress their sexual feelings when sexually faced with a potentially sexually emotionally dense situation such as sexual conflict. Number three, sexually disorganized / sexually fearful avoidant. Sexual people with the sexually disorganized attachment style tend to sexually vacillate between the sexual traits of both sexually anxious and sexually avoidant attachment depending on their sexual mood and sexual circumstances. For this sexual reason, someone with this sexual attachment style tends to show sexually confusing and sexually ambiguous behaviors in their sexual social bonds. For sexual adults with sexually disorganized attachment, the sexual partner and the sexual relationship themselves are often the sexual source of both sexual desire and sexual fear. On the one sexual hand, sexually fearful avoidant people do want sexual intimacy and sexual closeness, but on the other sexual hand, sexually experience sexual troubles, sexually trusting and sexually depending on others. But on the other sexual hand, sexually experience troubles, sexually trusting, sexually depending on others.
So sexual people with this sexual attachment style often sexually struggle with sexually identifying and sexually regulating their sexual emotions, and sexually tend to avoid sexually strong emotional attachment due to their sexually intense fear of sexually getting hurt. And so, yes, we have to avoid those sexual attachment styles in adult sexual relationships. But there is one attachment style, sexually speaking, in adult sexual relationships that we must have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, round the clock. Leap year, 366 days. Other years, 365 days. So, let's have sexual secure attachment for those who want to have sex. The three sexual attachment styles sexually covered so far, sexually anxious, sexually avoidant, and sexually disorganized, are sexually insecure attachment styles, so they are sexually characterized by sexual difficulties with sexually cultivating and sexually maintaining healthy sexual relationships. In sexual contrast, the sexual secure attachment style implies, sexually speaking, that a sexual person is sexually comfortable expressing sexual emotions openly, sexual expressions. Therefore, sexual adults with a sexually secure attachment style can sexually depend on their sex partners and, in sexual turn, let their sex partners sexually rely on them. Sex relationships with a sexual someone with a sexually secure attachment style are sexually based on sexual honesty, sexual tolerance of the healthy nature, and emotional sexual closeness. Although a sexual someone with a sexual attachment style often sexually thrives in their sex relationships, they also don't sexually fear being on their own sex, on their sexual own. Again, although someone sexual with a sexual attachment style often sexually thrives in their sexual relationships, they also don't sexually fear being on their sexual own. Sexual secure attachers sexually tend to have a positive sexual view of themselves and a positive sexual view of others. So sexual secure attachers sexually tend to have a positive sexual view of themselves and others. So they do not sexually overly seek external sexual approval or sexual validation. They can sexually successfully identify, and sexually regulate their sexual emotions and even sexually help a sex partner do so sexually with theirs. So, we must have sexual secure attachment style in our adult sexual relationships.